Cluster Conversations, a podcast by Africa Multiple.
Okay, so this is a new episode of our podcast, the Cluster Conversation of the Excellence Cluster Africa Multiple at the University of Bayreuth. My name is Joel Glassmann. I teach history here at the University of Bayreuth. I'm a member of the Institute of African Studies and a member of the Cluster of Excellence. And last semester, I had the pleasure to host Dr. Valérie Nour as a fellow of the Cluster Africa Multiple. Thank you for being here with us, Valérie. You are an anthropologist. You have studied in France, in Switzerland, in Germany, and you have finished a PhD, completed a PhD that has made some noise and received several prizes, among which the Frobenius Prize, etc. What was the title of the PhD? What was it about?
Thank you for inviting me to the podcast. My PhD was on craftspeople among Tuareg in Niger. And the title was Craft as a Social Practice.
And how did you come to this topic? How did you come to study craft in Niger?
It started actually with a seminar on Tuareg, where I had to had to choose a topic, and I thought, okay, Tuareg are nomads, so I have chosen the topic on artisans because I thought this should be something very small and easy to manage because they are mainly pastoralists. So when I started to prepare my presentation, I found that Tuareg artisans are not just doing technical like practices, but all the literature was about the supernatural powers and magic attributed to them. So especially literature from the 90s, they treat the special social status they have and the magic and how their status is connected to that. And this was somehow exciting. And some later I went to Mali it was for an internship. However, accidentally I met an artisan, and I only knew all these magic and supernatural things I read in the literature, and I was surprised he was sitting in his workshop and he was just making like normal, like a knife, a very simple knife without any decoration. And there was other people sitting around, and I was asking them, aren't you afraid of the magic and powers here going on? And they were laughing, hey, no, here we are sitting here drinking tea. And then I recognized, okay, what is how they're represented in the literature is not what's maybe going on in everyday life, in their work life. So, and then I really found it exciting to study craftsmanship among Tuareg. So I want to start like really looking like what's going on, what is happening in the workshop. And while in the literature it is always emphasized that they're endogamous, it means they're married within the family, and the occupation, like the craft practices, is handed over in the family as something remarkable. Like, you know, they are somehow related to magic, they are half in the world of the human, half in the world of the supernatural. And so they are somehow deemed to marry within the group because no one else wants to marry. This is how they were represented in the literature. And actually, endogamy is just a way of cousin marriage. I mean, and this is a very common practice all over West Africa and beyond, and even beyond Africa. So to call only one minority of the Tuareg as endogamously organized while everyone else is practicing cousin marriage is a bit strange, no?
So are you telling us that the Tuareg are presented as a caste society and it is not?
Exactly. Like, especially like when I, in conversation and early when I talk to other anthropologists saying I studied Tuareg artisans, anthropologists would directly say, they are castes, right? But the term caste, it always implies something like unfreedom, oppression, restriction, like predetermination. and it put them into this box. And even now in our conversation, we start like, yeah, with this perspective.
How did you approach craft among the Tuareg? How did you go about that?
Okay, so craft is a physical, tactile, and material practice. However, craft learning and working is also like always linked to social relationships. And this is for the Inadan, the family. So for Inadan, marriage within the family goes hand in hand with the fact that crafts are often practiced at home. So craft and family are interconnected in two ways, by marriage and by everyday life. Women sew usually, they work with leather and they sew bags of different sizes, and men, they carve mortars and beds and forge garden tools, knives and silver jewelry. Remarkable is that the workshops at home are open to all family members, men, women, children. You can also see neighbors, women and men, every age, and even travelers who pass the time in the workshops. So this creates a very heterogeneous workshop society, which is exceptional in Tuareg social life. Like, anyways, handicrafts are part of everyday family life, and children learn to forge, carve, and work leather as a matter of course. So in my research, I focus on what happened in the workshop, and I was trying to capture the embodied practical knowledge and the skills. Yes, so I tried to capture how they really shape the material, cut the wood and file, yeah, and how they engage with the whole body, and how this can be understood or grasped and put into words as a shared practice. So at the beginning, I didn't know how to approach craft, what is craft, and how could I write about it. So I only knew what I found, like purely technical descriptions, is not what would explain what's going on in the workshop. Like, in the sense of Chaîne Opératoire's only like focus on the modification of the materials is not what I have to spend 1.5 years of my life in Niger, right? So Pierre Lemonnier, a French anthropologist and scholar in material culture, he speaks of technological choices, and to follow these choices is interesting and insightful. So I started my study like observing, because I didn't know how to do it, so I started observing these technical activities, and I was asking for the names of the tools and the different practices. And it was good also to learn Tamajek and the craft related vocabulary, so it was a good approach, even because for the craftspeople it was something specific. When I do study about craft and I ask for the names of tools and observe how to make a camel saddle, it was a good introduction, so to say. So I have all these details. My diaries are full of how to make different artifacts and so on. But while doing all these observations, I understood that craft is a specific knowledge of things and tools, and a specific feeling of things and how to approach things. It is, so to say, a perception of the world, yeah? But how to study perception of the world. So to make it simple or graspable for me, I took it as a craft as a skilled vision and grasp onto the material world. And I was trying to follow this. And in order to experience or to grasp this sensory experience, I worked with them, I cut the leather, I took the knives, I even tried to forge rings, to take on or to understand how it feels, the materials and everything. So, and only then, for example, when I was spreading the millet glue on the leather, I understood why they always do it with the middle finger, while I thought, like, why they don't use the index finger, it would be much more like easy, right? You can easier handle. So, and only when I did myself, I knew when you spread the glue with the index finger, then whatever you touch afterwards is sticky. So they use the middle finger to keep the index finger clean to do all the rest of the things. And like while I was doing the, I mean, it took really a lot of time. I spent many weeks and hours in the workshops and long time, like what can I do out of all this? So I found one like aspect which became really an interesting thing, and it really is I have a full chapter in my thesis about the tools.
What kind of tools, and when you're speaking about tools, what kind of tools are they using? What kind of tools did you use when you were, so you were doing participant observation?
Yes.
What kind of tools, and can you give us a little bit of information, where did you work? Was it in Niamey, was it somewhere else? And what kind of tools did you use to do what kind of objects?
Okay, so actually I started my research in Niamey because the airport is in Niamey, so this was where I had to start. But during my research, I was traveling quite a lot. So I went to the north, to Agadez, to the Amir Mountains, and even once I went further south to Maradi. And this was in the beginning due to the political situation because of danger of kidnappings by ACMI from the north and Boko Haram from the... I mean, in fact, we didn't know the situation. So I was advised by the people to be a bit in move, to travel more and to travel spontaneously and not to tell around wherever I go. So this made me really traveling a lot. And this is even how I found out about the huge network of the Inadan family, which I consider as a community of makers and experts, instead of calling them caste, which really evokes other ideas than skill and knowledge, you know. However, like everywhere you Inadan, they work with metal, with iron, with metal. They make silver jewelry, they make garden tools. Further in the south, where you found big trees, they work more with wood and make bats and mortars. And women always sew leather bags in different sizes and for different occasions. So they need really quite a big range of tools to work leather, different kinds of metals, iron, wood, and so on. However, when you look in the toolboxes, and now I'm coming back to the tools, they're surprisingly sparse and simple, yeah? And when I in the beginning started to make inventories, I was surprised, but how, like there are some tools missing, how is it possible? And then when I was observing the way they work, their practices, and I started to work with them, because only when you're engaging in craft, you really understand what's going on technically, I recognized that they are constantly making tools. They're forging tools, they're melting other things down to make a new tool. They once a blacksmith was making a knife, and then he needed this tool, this iron, to sharpen the knife. And he didn't found it, so he just took a file and he made this iron to sharpen the knife out of it, like, besides, without saying anything. So, and then I understood that here it is, you know, you cannot consider craft by just looking at the objects in the toolbox, because it is just a one moment gaze, but the toolbox is constantly in transformation. And when I went to the literature, like anthropological literature on craftspeople, it is really surprising that tool making is no issue at all. I mean, tool making is the human, distinguished human from animal once, it was said, right? Now we know it is not the case. But anyways, like even the material culture studies working on craftspeople, they give lists of tools, but no one discusses tool making as such. I found two references or two remarks on tool making. One, it is from the 80s and 90s. Anyways, anthropologists were saying, yeah, they make their own tools because on the markets they're too expensive. And another guy was saying they would make their own tools because the markets are too far away. And I said, no, like making your own tools is not a lack of money or whatever, but it's just a competence. Yeah, they make their tools because they can do it, they know what they need, and they're able to do it. And to recognize this is something crucial to take artisans seriously. I mean, there's a big debate nowadays on technology in Africa, from Africa, yeah. But artisans are not really considered anyways. I don't know why, because they are really the ones who are the technologists, yeah.
So what you are telling us is that those craft people are not only playing a role in religion and in magic, and that's the contribution of your PhD, I guess. But does it? Do you mean they don't play a role in religion at all, or?
Yeah, that's true. They are not only working as craftspeople, but they have a very important role in other cultural or religious activities. For example, I mean, in the crucial rituals in life, they perform at the wedding ceremonies, and they take over the main task in the name-giving ceremonies also. So they sing and dance at the weddings, and at the name-giving ceremonies, they cut the hairs of the babies, and they even protect, they stay with the mother, like after birth, the first 7 days till the name giving, mother and baby are somehow meant to be in a like half between half in the world, half not in the world status. Only after 7th day the baby, even before it is called among Tuareg a guest, the baby, only at the 7th day the name giving ceremony, they so to say arrive in the world of the humans. And here the Smith women play a very important role protecting the mother and the baby. As the same at the wedding, like there you change your social status, so it's somehow a liminal phase. And again, the Smiths are the ones, while singing, dancing, drumming, accompany the couple in the new status of being a married couple. So indeed they have these ritual roles, and they are somehow, yes, related to the supernatural, perceived as having specific powers because of their craft skills, because, wow, they can melt metal, so there must be something about it. And I followed them, yeah. I mean, in the summer and the season, they are all the weddings going on, like everyone, the students from the city, they come to the village, and then the weddings going on, and you can rarely find the craftspeople in the workshops, but they're always busy with doing wedding, performing at weddings. However, my idea in my research was, I mentioned all these things in my thesis, but I want to emphasize, even in these rituals, they are like knowledgeable and skilled people, and they are not a damned caste who is somehow dismissed or outside society. Yeah, they can go to, they are close to the bride, they are close to the newborn baby. So they are not a caste which is not respected.
One of the concepts in your work by which you question the notion of caste, and you show that it's not only a closed caste, but it's more than that, it's the notion of mobility. Can you explain us what you mean with that?
Yeah, mobility, I found it really very crucial to understand these artisans as a community of experts and makers. When I started my research, of course, I went to the workshops, and in the workshops I found artisans working. And I first only focused on those who are engaged in craft. I mean, you always find those in Adan who maybe once they have learned, but they do other things, they study, they work as drivers or whatever, teachers. So I thought I would focus only on those working in the workshops. And then after, like, I spent more than 1.5 years, I saw that artisans working in the workshops, they're leaving. They decide, I will go to the village and grow onions. And I thought, wow, what's going on? How can they leave the work of their family? But after some months, they came back and said, now I come back to the anvil. And then I thought somehow, the youth, is there a change or what's going on? But when I started to talk to the older artisans and smiths, they all told me when they were young, they were traveling, did very different jobs. They were working for NGOs. They went to Kano to make camel, or they went to Libya and Algeria and worked there as seasonal workers in the gardens and pursued very different jobs. However, they always stayed within the family. They went to the south to work for a project from a French organization, but they stayed with the mother's brother or with the grandmother or with the father's or a cousin, staying there and learned another skill, like perhaps with their parents, with their father, they learned like jewelry making, and then they learned camel saddle making. And this is how like everyone developed his own skills and specialized in different craft activities, but even how the knowledge circulate among them and how they develop further and update the different practices. And before I was thinking of the craftsman like somehow settled down in the workshop all his life and handing over his knowledge to his son in one line, but then I saw how it is circulating and how each according to his own interests develop his own set of skills. Yes, and only when you take on this mobility perspective, like I was able, because me too, I was traveling and I found some people I met in the capital, Niamey. I found them later in the village and I thought, what are you doing here? And then he was telling me, I came here to help my brother and helping him making knives for some weeks, and then he would maybe go back to Niamey.
Right, and I think this concept of mobility, that's also what brought you to a new project and position at the chair of the sociology of migration and mobility at the University of the Bundeswehr in Munich. Thank you very much for being here with us. And I remind everybody of your upcoming book, published in 2024 with the Frobenius Institute, Die Unbeständigkeit der Dinge. We're looking forward to see this important work published. And thank you to all for listening to us. And we will have upcoming episodes of this podcast coming up.